Matt Rosenberg has worked public policy, advocacy, journalism, and communications for more than three decades. He has written a new book, What's Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. I'm happy to have you here, man.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be with you, Eric.
So listen, I was in Chicago, I guess right before the pandemic hit. It would have been 2018, summer of 2018. And it's always kind of like the tale of two cities. I've been to Cubs games and I've been to White Sox games. And it feels like two different neighborhoods there, that's for sure. So for those of us who don't know much about Chicago, talk about what it was like growing up for you there and what the city's like these days.
Sure. It's a city that still has greatness wrapped into its DNA. There are huge and often horrible challenges we're facing. When I grew up here, starting in 1964, going for about 30 years from early childhood to, coming of age, it was a great city. Skyscrapers, professional sports, great people, vibrant neighborhoods, safe streets, pretty good public schools, city finances that were reasonably together, and the culture, the architecture, the energy of this place,
right.
it's still got a lot to commend it in those respects. My gosh, just the music, the jazz,
yeah,
blues, and the people. The people are,
it's a very friendly city, Matt.
Yeah, it is. The people are excellent. I always, we moved to Seattle in 1994, my wife and I. I've always come back here, and I was drawn back here last year by the great troubles that were arising after the death of George Floyd. But I've always said Chicago's the kind of place where when people say, hey, I'd like to have you over for dinner, they actually do it, and their grandma is there cooking for you. In a place like Seattle, which I still love, people say that, and then they don't follow through. So people in the Midwest, maybe people in Chicago, just more down-to-earth and friendly. So all of that then,
yeah,
when I was growing up. But it's a big contrast to now.
Well, I guess people wonder what happened to the cities. I mean, the weekend that I was there for a Cubs game, it was one of the deadliest weekends in history. There were like 30 people that were killed that weekend. 27, something crazy, or 35
wow.
people shot, some kind of crazy number. Just in that 3-day
yes.
period. So what happened in Chicago? Why all of a sudden, why that kind of activity?
Nobody can put their finger exactly on it, but there are a few factors that come into play. It's always been a violent city, but it's gotten a great deal worse since the death of George Floyd and the rioting all over the country. It was very bad here. But again, you were here in 2018, which was before George
yep.
Floyd. Gangs.
Is it gang related mostly?
Well, gang related, it's sometimes tough to trace. I can tell you this. 4 out of 5 births to black mothers, the mothers are single. Hispanics, it's 50%. Whites and Asians, 10%. If you look at the murder perpetrators when they are identified by race, and you look at the murder victims, they're overwhelmingly black. And next in line are Hispanics. Now, that's not to condemn any entire race. It is to say that I think one of the biggest things that has gone wrong is parenting, and it's the most old-fashioned thing in the world you can think of. But there are literally young men, usually young men of color, running absolutely amok on the streets. Now, this year and last year, versus 2018 is a huge escalation in armed vehicle hijacking, carjackings. It went up hugely last year, and it's going up even more this year. We're at 1,500 carjackings, and
wow.
the year's not even over yet. We're at 700 murders. We're keeping pace with last
wow.
year, which was a huge jump compared to 2019.
Right.
Here's the thing, Eric. A good year in Chicago is less than 500 murders. So I would peg it back to parenting, to the middle class moving out, which goes to fiscal mismanagement of the city and the crime. I would peg it also to badly failing public schools. And then finally here we have something called bail reform, which needs to be reformed. Basically what that means is the county court system decided they would let out people who were arrested for serious crimes. They would let them out on no cash bail or low cash bail. It's a fine idea if it's a first-time nonviolent offender, but for a guy who's been arrested for carjacking, they let him out on $500 bond, and all too often he goes out and kills someone or commits another carjacking. And then, really, the elephant in the room is how we handle the issue of race and responsibility. And basically, we've got racial essentialism. Some people call it critical race theory, but it permeates every aspect of our life here, including so-called criminal justice, which has turned into social justice. So it's really a rather huge mess that we're in here.
It seems to be perpetually corrupt there in Chicago, the government at least, governing. Is there any hope that that can ever change, and why is it so corrupt there? Or maybe is that just a misconception that we have here in out east?
No, it is endemic, and local experts say that we only catch about 10% of the crooks in government, which, wow, if you apply it to right now, is interesting because out of our 50 aldermen, 3 are currently facing federal trial in corruption cases. So if the rule of 10% applied that we're only catching 10%, then it would be more like 30 that are actually committing misdeeds. But, you know, that's conjecture. The reason we have an endemic corruption here is, I think, fourfold. There's a sort of a strident leftism which assumes that blacks can't rise to the same standard as whites. That corrupts our thinking and has a lot of spin-off effects. We have incompetence to run the schools and the courts and the city finances. We have ambition, which turns into power that is wielded for its own sake. The office holders just want to gain and consolidate power. They don't want to actually use it for the greater good. And then finally, the corruption itself gives rise to what I call rigged rules of governance. And actually, Eric, this is, in a way, the nub of it. The corruption perpetuates itself because to keep it alive, we need funny little rules like hiding the elections in odd number years and February and April for the primary in general. So you get 33% turnout, which just means the insiders like the public employee union members come out to vote.
Interesting. I never thought about
that. Yeah, and there's like 3 or 4 other things there on the rigged rules that I could tick off, but I think you get the idea.
Did you go into the inner city? And I haven't got a chance to read the book. I'm looking forward to it. But did you go into the inner city to interview people for this book? What did you find there?
Yes. And
what was that like? That had to be interesting.
My whole trip. You know, I lived here 30 years. I came back. I moved into Bridgeport, the neighborhood where we've had 5 Irish mayors come from. Then I went deep into the South Side. So what I found, was pretty interesting. Basically, I found a lot of success stories. And so that's the flip side of all this, Eric. I think the way out of this, there is a policy playbook, right? And I lay it out in the book, hopefully in plain English. I sure tried. But it's also a household-by-household solution to the city's troubles. So, for example, I met ex-convicts who've gotten out and turn their life around. They're running businesses now. Two brothers who were big drug dealers for a major gang, they're out now. They're running a delivery service, and they're doing great. They're actually innovating. They've gone from, cars you can rent to boats you can rent. And they're taking their message to at-risk youth in their community. There's a guy who did 3 years for involuntary manslaughter when he was young. He owns 10 residential properties now. He's a property manager doing well, and he's like the unofficial mayor of his neighborhood. There's a couple who moved up here from Louisiana who had all kinds of trouble when they were young, and they've totally got it together now. Again, entrepreneurs raising four children, kind of strictly, and the mom is a Christian homeschooler. So there's one success story after another. So I sat down with these folks in their workplaces and in their kitchens and heard their stories. So there's some hope here, too.
Well, that's a great message. If you just happen to be tuning in, I'm here with Matt Rosenberg, who has written a book, What's Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. What are the schools like? Are the unions running the schools there, the unions?
Flat out, yes. They're on a mad monopolistic power quest. It's really not good. One of the success stories, though, sheds additional light on that. A young man named Jesse Mack from the South Side. He grew up in a very tough neighborhood, gunfire at night, dad not around. Mom was a real rock of Gibraltar after she licked her own addiction problems. His K through 8 school was not very good. He talked to me about that. He was, you know, not gifted but bright. He skated through fine, but the teachers couldn't explain stuff to kids who were confused. He noticed that. It bugged him. Well, he got into a public charter high school, and he said that made all the difference in the world. And, of course, this young man was African-American. He said, number one, there were adult black men who were college graduates who were the teachers and role models, and they really had a strict code of conduct there. They taught you all kinds of basic things that some kids never get, right? Like how to shake somebody's hand, look them in the eye, how to dress, how to behave in class. But they made sure that the knowledge was mastered in math, science, reading, and more. And he went off to college, and he wanted to go further, and he eventually got an MBA from DePaul University, but he had to struggle. He didn't get accepted the first time. And it helped him move up the ladder at work. So, you know, charter schools help, but the regular public schools are in big trouble. The performance numbers are horrible. The city plays games with numbers. They talk about the 82% high school graduation rate. But, you know, less than one out of five black students can pass muster on the National Assessment of Educational Progress. In fourth and eighth grade on reading and math on the SATs, it's just as bad when you break it down by race. They're failing black kids. They're failing to meet the needs of black and Latino students in the Chicago public schools. Upside is we've got more than 100 charter schools, and they're good. Downside is the teachers union just keeps at it. And they've gotten the city and our beleaguered mayor, Lori Lightfoot, to agree to a growth cap on charter schools. Very bad news.
A growth cap meaning what? You can only get so big or you can only have so many schools?
Correct. They've got like a moratorium on growth effectively of the number of charter schools and also on the number of seats, as they call it, at charter schools. And this is the one bright area in Chicago public schools. We've had University of Chicago researchers dig into this and find that quantitatively that the public charter schools in Chicago are doing a better job than non-charter schools for minority kids from low-income households. Much better job in four or five very meaty ways. And so you want more of that. And so a growth cap says you can't do that. So what you get from teachers unions in the big cities all around the country is they're scared of competition. The same teachers union got the Democratic majority in our state legislature to approve something else, which is a moratorium on closing low-performing schools. Now, maybe not out where your listeners live, maybe not, but in Chicago school closures have been a real lightning rod. And somehow, you know, and we have schools that are two-thirds empty, right, and or very low performing. You got to shut those schools down. There has to be accountability. Sometimes they shut down charter schools, and that's a good thing, right? Because if they're not performing, this is how it goes, Charlie, right?
Right, right, sure.
But the teachers union just doesn't like that. They don't want to play by any rules of either competition or accountability. Now, you know, it's not to condemn teachers. Some of the best people out there are teachers, including public school teachers, who try hard and devote their whole life to this, who buy, you know, school supplies out of their own pocket, right? Who grade tests at night. So this is not to disparage teachers, but there is something about the leadership of these public employee unions that has gone off the rails. And we see that with teachers' unions in most of our nation's big cities, and especially in Chicago. So the thing is, families are voting with their feet, Eric. They're leaving the Chicago public schools in droves, and the data are tracked. And I have some of that in my book. The only area where enrollment is increasing in Chicago public schools is in the 100-plus charter schools. And so these are the very ones that now have a growth cap slapped on them. Everything is backwards and upside down here in Chicago. And so I believe we need a sort of a bottom-up voter revolution. We need, first of all, for much better voter turnout than one-third of registered voters. And I think that we need more and more of the non-government organizations, the nonprofits in the Latino and African-American communities to step up and organize voter registration drives. So when the next city elections come around in 2023, we can put some better people in there in the mayor's office and in the city council. And I think, you know, some of the business benefactors who see the crime in the failing schools and who speak out about it need to step up, frankly, with money for education and outreach to get more people voting. And we need somehow to mount an effort to change our state laws so that our local elections can be held on the same day as presidential elections. We'd get a much bigger turnout and quite possibly a different result.
Great stuff. Matt Rosenberg has written a book, What's Next Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. Hey, we have just a couple of minutes left here, and that's great stuff, everything you just said there. You drove cab in Chicago many years ago. Any wild experiences that you can talk about driving cab?
Ha. The real good stories are from when I drove a limo.
Okay, let me hear that story then. Or can you tell those?
I'm the guy who can say I drove the dead. And I don't mean people on Halloween.
Oh, great. You had the Grateful Dead in your limo.
The Grateful Dead.
Wow, what happened?
I drove the Grateful
Dead. Go ahead.
You know, I'm contractually obligated not to say anything about it.
That's can you tell us anything? How long were they in your limo?
Oh, just from the airport to downtown. There were certain things that I observed. No, I just can't share it. I'm sorry. Okay. That's going to be my next book. Okay?
That's the next book, Driving the Dead.
The Man Who Drove the Dead.
Drove the Dead.
You know, it was fun. Actually, one of my more colorful experiences was working on an undercover journalism investigation where this is with the Sun-Times and with a great nonprofit called the Better Government Association. We knew that inspectors were always shaking down small business people. Like if you ran a bar or a restaurant, the city inspectors would come in and tell you, oh, your wires are crossed, your plumbing is bad, you need to stuff $100 in an envelope and put it over there in that booth for me.
Right.
And it happened all the time here. That's the kind of place it was. So we set up a sting operation.
Wow.
And I was just a young schnook along for the ride, an intern, but I was on the undercover team. We did this. 60 Minutes made an episode about it. The reporters from the newspaper ended up writing a month-long series, and it even got nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. That was pretty crazy stuff.
You're lucky you didn't get your kneecap.
And I write about that.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
In the book.
Wow, that's great.
No, I was just saying, that's in the book. That's in the book a little bit. And, you know, there were other fun things that helped shape my consciousness.
Yeah.
We have what I call airport wars out here, too, planning a new airport and fighting with Chicago City Hall about who controls what. So there's some colorful stuff that helped get me interested in cleaning up the government and seeing the city do better. And that's part of what I write about in the book.
Well, that sting operation, you're lucky, fortunate to still have your kneecaps.
You know, funny you should mention kneecaps. There are two different times in my life when people in Chicago threatened to break my knees.
Right.
But I don't think we have time to talk about that right
now. You got a minute or two if you want to talk about a short version of one of those.
Well, I'll tell you about one time,
all
not
right.
The other. So I worked as a newspaper reporter, too, of course. You know,
yep.
I mean, I've basically been a journalist my whole life. So
right.
I'm out in the suburbs of Chicago. And I call up the Teamsters local because they're organizing the police in one of the towns I cover. And I say, I've been looking at your financial reports, because you could do that at the National Labor Relations Board, you know,
mm-hmm.
public records, right? Our friend. And I see they've spent $60,000 one year on what they call miscellaneous,
right? Right.
So I asked the union rep, so $60,000 for miscellaneous? It said flowers, gifts, and miscellaneous. And
right.
I go, who are you buying $60,000 worth of flowers, gifts, and miscellaneous for? And why isn't that spelled out? And he said, you want to keep asking questions like that? Somebody is going to break your knees.
Right, right.
And I went ahead and wrote the article anyway without all the extra details. Nobody came to break my knees. But, you know, it's just that kind of place.
Well, we're just outside of Youngstown, Ohio here, so we understand that mindset very well here. It was a lot of that went on here, especially through the 1960s. Hey, listen, man, thoroughly enjoyed our time together. Hey, tell people how to get the book before we go.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So basically, it's for sale online only, not in bookstores. So you got to go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and just, you know, enter What Next Chicago.